All right, I will say good morning. Let us begin. Just want to start by thanking our sponsors for this morning's shiur, by thanking Justin and Abigail Rosemore for dedicating all the shiurim and drashos this month in memory of their beloved son Kobe, Chaim Yaakov David, Zichron Leracha, Ben Yosef Tzadok. To thank our monthly shiur sponsor, Alan and Sue Marowitz, and family, Jason, Deborah, Justin, Rebecca, Mindy, Simcha, and the grandchildren for dedicating all of the shiurim and drashos this month in the Zichus of Refuah for Sue. Shulamis Tova Bas Mindel Zichron Lebracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Sue together with Kol Chol Yisrael will have a complete and enduring refuah. And I will say with that, let us begin. So today's daf is Tzadik 90. We left off on Pei Tes Amud Beis 89b, and we left off in the where the lines get wide, the second line. So we'll say, so remember again, we left off in the middle of, I realize, should have just gone a few more moments and finished off to the Mishnah, but we left off in the middle of a beautiful and dramatic dynamic where HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to the Avos complaining about the culpability of Klal Yisrael. Avraham, surprisingly enough, taking a strong stance. Yaakov taking a strong stance. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak is the one who advocates on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael, having such incredible gratitude towards Yitzchak, says the words, Avinu Ata, you are our father, you are the one who advocated for us. And Yitzchak Avinu says, Amalam Yitzchak, Ad She'ata Mekalzuni Kalzula HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't praise me. Praise God. And Yitzchak shows Klal Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, he points. Remember again, this is all a reference to the Messianic era. Yitzchak points to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when Klal Yisrael somehow is able to see the Ribono Shel Olam. Nasu Einayim Lamarom. They lifted their eyes up and they said, Va'omrim, Atu Hashem Avinu, Goalenu Me'olam Shemecha. You Hashem are our Father, our Redeemer, forever is your name. Amrab Chibar Amma Amrab Yochanan Ra'ui Haya Yaakov Avinu Leirid Minitzayim B'Shal Shalosh Shal Barzal. Really, when Yaakov Avinu went down to Egypt, he should have gone in iron chains. So we'll say the idea being that when Yaakov Avinu went down to Egypt, that was the beginning of Golos for Klal Yisrael. Because that was the beginning of Golos, he shouldn't have gone down in chains, like people in Golos, like people in servitude go. Elo, shezechuso garmalo. But rather, again, it was the schus, ultimately again, of Yaakov Avinu, that allowed him to go down to Egypt, not as a slave, but as a free man. Dechsiv, because Gemara over quotes the pasuk from Hosea, bechavle adam amshechem ba'avosos ahava. With literally, again, the ropes of man, I will bring them down. With chains of love, I will be for them. Kimerime ol alechayehem, ve'et elav ochio. So we'll say, if you look at Rashi says over here, Kimerime bechevle adam, b'shil chibas ha'adam eshachtel mitzayim b'chavalem v'lo b'shal shalos. So the Rav Shalom says, I took them down with ropes of love to Egypt instead of chains. Out of my love for Yaakov and out of the schus of Yaakov Avinu, I took them down to Egypt gently. Kiremime ol alechayehem, literally again, like those who lift up a burden. Rashi says, Ke'adam hasovel umiseya lebehemto laharim ola me'al tzavara, belevachru mekalos. So we'll say like a person who ultimately helps the animal load onto his shoulders in a gentle fashion. So to HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped us load or helped to load the burden of Egypt onto us in a gentle fashion as well. So what it really is, you know, the Gemara sensitizes us to that the Ribono Shel Olam acts towards us in so many different kind ways, so many chasadim, in so many different ways, at so many different times. Chasadim, kindnesses that often we are unaware of, but kindnesses that exist nevertheless. Beautiful, says the Gemara, says the Mishnah. Hamotzi eitzim kedei levashal beitz hakalas. We'll say back to Hilchos Shabbos. Back to Hilchos Shabbos. So the Gemara says, if a person, remember again, we're still talking about the halachos of Hotzah, and ultimately again, how much you have to carry of any particular item in order to be chayiv for transferring an item from one domain to another. So remember, the answer is always the same. The answer always is you're only chayiv for carrying out an amount that is chashiv, an amount that is significant. It's just that the definition of significance varies item to item. So, if one carries out wood, enough wood to create a fire to cook an easily cooked egg. We already spoke about the eggs, right? That's the chicken's egg. Tavlin, spices, kedela tabal beis akala. Enough spices to go ahead and spice an easily cooked egg. Umitzarfim zemze, and different spices combine with each other to form the shear. Klipe agozim, nutshells, klipe rimonim, pomegranate shells, istis, upua, so istis, I will say safflower, pua is matter. Kedelitz baban beged katan pisavka. Enough, these are items that are used for dyes. So enough, ultimately, again, to color or to dye the small cloth that a woman would wear on the top of her hat. Miraglayim, urine. The Rebbe is saying in this context, urine, interestingly enough, was used as a form of detergent, which is quite fascinating. We'll see again the parameters of that in just a bit. So miraglayim, neser, boris, kamalia, ashlag. So we'll say these are all different types of items that were used as detergents. Kedei lechabes beged katan. Your chayb, if you carry out enough to launder a small garment, pisavka, that a woman would wear on top of her hat. Rabbi Huda Omer, Kedei Lahabir Asakesem. Rabbi Huda says that ultimately, again, you're chayv if you carry out enough detergent to go ahead and remove a stain. Says the Gemara, Tanina Chadazimna. So both of the Gemara is questioning the first part of the Mishnah. So the first part of the Mishnah is, if one goes ahead and takes out wood, so how much wood are you chayv for taking out? Enough to go ahead and cook an easily cooked egg. So says the Gemara, we learned this once already. Tanina Chadazimna. So says the Gemara, Eitzim kedei levashla beitz akala. Right? If you carry out Eitzim, how much Eitzim are you chayv for carrying out? Enough to go ahead. How much? I'm sorry. So Tanicha Kano. Kano is a quill. So we'll say kedei lasos kulmos. So a reed. So how large of a reed are you chayiv ultimately again for carrying out on Shabbos? Enough to go ahead and fashion a quill. If for some reason, however, im haya av omarusas, but if the quill or if the reed was thick or cracked and therefore it can't be used as a quill, kedei levashla beitz akala shor beitzim trufa unesuna beilfis, then I will say your chayiv if you carry enough ultimately to what? To go ahead and cook an easily cooked egg, right? That was already put into the frying pan. So we'll say the Gemara assumes over here that halacha lemaisa, ultimately again, it is the same. A reed is the same thing as a piece of wood. So we already learned this once before. I would have thought that's only the halacha by the reed. Why? Because a thick or a cracked reed, halacha lemaisa, is not fit for anything else. However, aval itzim dechazu lekacha, but wood. We'll say just a reminder if everyone could remember to mute. However, again, aval itzim dechazu lekacha, but wood ultimately again. But wood that is fit for a lekacha. So Rashi says over here. But wood that is fit. Rashi says lekacha de igla shin shel mafteach. Wood that is fit to be used ultimately again as a tooth for a key or a tooth for a lock, I should say. Rashi says shein shel mafteach, a tooth of a key. Excuse me. Afilu kol shu. I would have thought that any amount of wood ultimately again would have been usable. Or I should say would be chashiv and therefore be chayiv for otzah. So therefore again, essentially what the Mishnah is saying is the halacha of wood is really the same halacha as a reed. So namely again, it's the same thing. And therefore your chayv, if you carry the amount necessary to cook an easily cooked egg. The reason the Mishnah had to restate this halacha by wood is because the havamina is, I would have thought that the shear for wood is actually less than the shear for a reed, because a broken or a cracked or a thick weed, a reed, excuse me, is not usable for anything else. Masha inkin, wood, even a small amount of wood could be technically usable for the tooth of a key, but kamash blon, you only chayv if you carry out enough to start a fire to cook an easily cooked egg. Good. Tavlin kedei letavl beitz akala. So spices, you're chayv if you carry out enough to go ahead and spice an easily cooked egg. Or minimum, but 1 second. Now listen, and the Mishnah also said that all different types of spices combine to form this shear. Or minimum, tavlin shnayim v'gimel shemos yamin echad. If you have spices, two or three, of the same type of spice, meaning even if they have different names, but they're from the same min. Rashi says, for example, Papa Lavan, Shachar Va'aruch. So for example, if you have, you know, white pepper, black pepper, long pepper. So again, even though they, so in this case, I'll say, so they have three different names, but Lamaisa, they're all in the pepper family. O Mishlosha Minim, Vishem Achad, or three different things, but they have the same name. Asurin Umitstarfim Ze'im Ze'. Ultimately, again, they have the ability to combine with each other, right? If there is, so we're not getting into the Isser piece, they have the ability to combine with each other. So we'll say, now, from this Gemara, what it seems to be over here, well, let's see, the Gemara says, V'amr Chizkiya, Chizkiya says, B'minei Masika Shaninu, that when is this true? This is true, ultimately, again, Halacha L'maisa, that when they all combine to enhance the flavor of the item being cooked, that's when they could combine. So we'll say, now, our Mishnah doesn't seem to make any qualifications like that. Our Mishnah just seems to make a blanket statement that halacha l'maisa, spices could combine, to which the Gemara says, Taima d'chazu l'mate kesakadeira. Sounds like the reason spices can combine is because they are unified in their ability to add flavor to the pot. Halav hachi lo. But if this were not to be the case, then it would not be so. To which the Gemara says, Hachinami kidele matik. So the Gemara says, you're right. The Mishnah is also dealing with a case where all of the spices involved all contribute to the enhanced flavor of the pot. And in Hachinami Rabbo say, when do the spices combine? Only if they work in concert to enhance the flavor of the pot. That's when halacha l'maisa they combine. But if they do not work in concert to enhance the flavor of the item that would technically be cooked, then they would not combine. Beautiful. Klipia goes in klipia ramonim satis or pua kadelis ba baget katan. So remember again, if you have shells of nuts or shells of pomegranates or safflower or madder, right? Ultimately, again, your chayiv, if you carry out enough to dye a small garment that a woman wears on the top of her hat, or mini, but 1 second, hamotzi samanim shiruyin, if one goes ahead and carries out on Shabbos, that will say samanim shiruyin are herbs that are already soaked. So what's the halacha? Halacha l'maisa, you're chayv if you carry out enough to go ahead and dye the sample cloth. So let's remember again, people who sold dyes, or for that matter, sold fabric, would often have, you know, sample material. So sample material was a very, very, very small piece of cloth, but you would be able to show a potential customer the color of the dye. So we see from, so now the Braisa says over here, the Mishnah says over here, that if you carry out herbs that have been the shuriyin, that are soaked, right, then halochal ma'isir chayib, if you carry out enough, even to dye a very small piece of fabric. Now we'll say, now that amount is less than the amount of the Mishnah. So what's going on over here? So we'll say, to which the Gemara says, there is a distinction between herbs that have not yet been soaked and herbs which have been soaked. No one goes through the process of soaking and preparing herbs to make dye for only if all they're going to dye is a very small amount of material. Meaning if you're going to go through the process of preparing dye, you are going to have something significant to dye. Therefore, again, I will say, when it comes to the herbs themselves, before they have been dyed, right, you're only chayiv if you carry out enough herbs to dye something significant. What is the minimum shear of something significant? That's the small cloth that a woman wears on top of her hat. Masha'inkein, once the herbs have already been immersed, once they've already been, I'm forgetting the word, but shiruyin, soaked, right? Once they're already soaking, then I will say, then even a smaller amount of herbs is chashuv. Meaning once they're already soaked in meat and prepared, then it's a smaller amount that's chashuv. And ultimately, even if you just carry enough in order to go ahead and literally dye just a small amount of sample cloth, you will be chayiv on Shabbos as well. Meiraglayim, urine. So the Gemara says, Tana meiraglayim ad ben memyom. When was urine used for detergent? After it sat for 40 days. So apparently, again, the urine has to sit for 40 days, and then halacha l'maisa, it's usable for urine. For detergent. So we'll say, so remember again, that's the context of urine being carried out to the Mishnah, the context of a cleaning agent. So the Gemara says, Neser, Tana, Neser, Alexandrus, Velo, Neser, V'lo nesa anpanturin. Anpanturin. So I'll say, so again, only a certain type of nesa apparently was used for detergent purposes. Boris. Am Rav Yehuda. Zechol. So he says, what's boris? Boris was sand. Sand. And sand apparently was also used as a type of detergent. So the Gemara says, Am Rav Zechol. V'atan yaha boris v'hachol. But once again, we have a braisa that speaks about boris and chol, which sounds like, again, boris is not sand. Boris is boris, chol, sand is sand. Ella, my boris, what's boris? Kavrisa. Boris is sulfur. Sulfur. So apparently, again, Rashi says gafris. Apparently that was used as a detergent. One second. Meisvei, hosifu alehen, hachalditzin, vahalionin, vaboris. Va'ol. So we'll say, so remember again, just to give you the context over here, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Hosifu aleim in shvius. This the Brice that they're quoting over here is talking about Shemitah. They added on to the list of things which are governed by Shemitah restrictions, all of these items just mentioned. But one second, if you tell me that Boris is sulfur, v'isagadaitcha kavrisa, and if you want to say ultimately again that boris is kavrisa, is sulfur, then at the end of the day, kavrisa mi'isa v'shvius, I will say again, is sulfur subject to the halachas of Shemitah? Absolutely not. Vatnan, zeh'aklal, kol she'yesh lo ikar, yesh lo shvius. V'she'ein lo ikar, ein lo shvius. I will say the only things that are subject to the halachas of Shemitah are things which have a root. Things which have a root, right? Rooted plants, rooted vegetables. That's what all rooted trees. That's what has a din of Shemitah. But anything that doesn't have a root ultimately is not subject to Shemitah. Obviously, sulfur does not have a root. So how could it be? So how could it be that Boris is sulfur? Elamai Boris. Rather, what is Boris? Allah. Boris is aloe. Aloe. Really? Vahatanya. Boris va'ala. But one second, we have another braisa that seeks out Boris and Allah, which indicates to us that Boris is not aloe, right? Allah is aloe. Ella trey gavni Allah. Rather, again, simple answer is two different types of aloe. There's aloe, and there's Boris aloe. Good. So kimulya, am Rav Yehuda shlufdutz. What's kimulya? Kimulya is shlufdutz. Good. So Rashi says over here, Lo isparish. I don't know what this is. Elakach shmo. But this is what it's called. So we'll say, so again, so whatever this is, the shluf dutz. But apparently, again, obviously the idea is it is a detergent. So again, the Gemara goes, Ashlag. What's Ashlag? Amar Shmuel, Sha'altinu lechon lechuse yama. So Shmuel says, I asked all of those who travel the oceans. So we'll say, so remember, again, if you ever wanted to know about something that you thought was exotic, you would ask the sailors, right? Because the sailors, those who travel the seas, see many different cultures, see many different things. So I asked those who would travel the seas, V'amru li shon'a shemei, right? This is called the shon'a, shon'ana shemei. U'mishtach, so what's this shon'ana? What's which we're calling ashlig? U'mishtachach benukva demarginisa. You could find it in the crevices of pearls. U'mafkif le'baramza the parasol. You have to remove it with a metal instrument. Okay, so apparently this ashlig is this some type, something found inside pearls that can only be removed very delicately. Beautiful. Says the Mishnah. Pilpelas kol shehu, v'itran kol shehu. So we'll say, so now, going still, this is the last Mishnah, well, this is not the second last Mishnah, but continuing in this topic, ultimately again, of the shear for items, being carried out. So the Mishnah says pilpelas. And I will say now, pilpelas sounds like pepper. So Rashi, interestingly enough, points out over here, pilpelas kol shehu, ve'inu pilpel shalanu, u'begimar mefarish kol shehu v'maychazi. So interestingly enough, Rashi just points out, this is not our pepper. This is not contemporarily what we have as a pepper. But again, we'll see in the Gemara a little bit more what it's used for. But again, if you carry out any amount of pilpelas, you'll be chayiv. Itran I will say is tar, kol shehu. If you carry out any amount, you're chayiv. Minei b'samim u'minei matachos, kol shehim. Any amount of spices, any amount of metal, ultimately, again, you'll be chayiv for carrying out on Shabbos. So we'll say similarly again, anything that is from the stones of the altar and from the dust of the altar. Ultimately, again, you'd be chayiv for carrying out any amount of that. Mekak Svarim Umekak Matpechosehem Kolshehu. Similarly, again, if you carry out the Bosei, so we're going to see, if you look at Rashi, Rashi's translating it over here, Mekak Svarim, Achilos Talas Ochal Svarim, Merakva Nishmo Mekak. Rotted Svarim. So we'll say, if you have Svarim scrolls that are no longer usable, right? Or for that matter, coverings of scrolls that are no longer usable. If you carry out any amount of those items on Shabbos, you will be chayiv. The Rebbe says, we're going to see why, Rashi already points out, why is that, that any amount of a sefer, any amount of a cover, because we'll say these are items that any amount would normally be put into Shemus, into Gniza, would be stored away. So because any amount would be stored away, therefore again, any amount becomes chashiv. And because it's chashiv, therefore you would be chayiv ultimately for carrying it out. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Af Amotzi Misham Sheva the Zara Kol Shul. I'm sorry. See, Rashi says Shemasino Salam Gazer. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Af Amotzi Misham Sheva the Zara Kol Shul. Even one who goes ahead and carries out any amount of Avodah Zara. I will say now, Misham Sheva Avodah Zara are really service utensils. Those items that serve Avodah Zara, you will be chayiv. Shnei Amar Lo Yidbak Biyat Chama Uma Menachirin. Because the pasuk says, you shall not hold on to Ma'uma, any small amount from the forbidden treasure from the nations you go to war against. So we'll say, so you see from here that the Torah prohibits us even from having a ma'uma, from a little bit of avodah zara. So what does that show you? That shows you that even a minute amount of avodah zara is considered to be chashiv, and because it's chashiv, ultimately again you'd be chayiv for otsa. So we'll say, so the common denominator in this Mishnah, which is in drastic distinction to the previous Mishnayos, is that whereas in previous Mishnayos we were always assuming that every item has a shear, every item has an amount that is the threshold of chashivos that makes it important and therefore prohibits it from being carried out. There are certain items where their chashivos is in any measure. So the popelas, any amount. The tar, any amount. Besamim, any amount. Metal, any amount. Stones of the mizbeach, dirt of the mizbeach, any amount. Rotted svarim, rotted covers, because you're going to put them away for Ingeniz and Shemus, any amount. Good. So the Gemara says, Misham Shavod Zorah, Avod, right? Service utensils of Zorah, any amount. Says the Gemara. Papeles koshu lamaychazi. So we'll say, so again, let's go back to the pepper, right? Why are you chai for carrying out any amount of pepper? As you will say, because remember, again, I would have assumed that pepper is just part of the spice discussion. Well, spice discussion is the previous Mishnah, and the halacha for spices is what? If you carry out enough to go ahead and spice an easily cooked egg. So yet, why you chayiv over here for carrying out the pepper of any amount? To which the Gemara, my chazil recha peh. So we'll say, so apparently, a pepper was like the Talmudic tic tac, right? Or the Talmudic Listerine strip, right? So halach lamais, if you had bad breath, so apparently, again, you took a little bit of pilpil, you went ahead and you chewed on it, or I don't know if you chewed on it, you just kept it in your mouth, but it was good for bad breath. And apparently, again, any small amount worked as well. Good. Itran kolshu, any amount of tar. So we'll say this is fascinating. The maichazya. So what good is tar? To which the Gemara says, litzil chasa. Rashi says, ke'ev chatzi harosh. Apparently, again, tar was a remedy for headaches. All right, so Dr. Gladstein will have to weigh in on this. So I'm assuming that you're not ingesting the tar, but it must have been that they must have maybe rubbed it on the head or rubbed it on the temples, and somehow, I guess if you have tar on your head, you forget all about the headache, which might probably forget about everything else. So in any event, that was the remedy that they used. Mine b'samim kol shehem. So again, remember, besamim. So we'll say in this context, besamim means sweet-smelling herbs. Right? Rashi already points that out in the Mishnah. L'reach tov. So any amount of besamim you're chayiv. To which the Gemara says, Tan Rabban Amotzi reach ra kol shehu. So we'll say, now the Braisa says as follows. If you bring something which emits a bad odor, right? So any amount you'll be chayiv for that. So we'll say, if you carry out something foul-smelling. So halacha l'maisa again. So you're chayiv for any amount. Shemen tov. Similarly, again, if you bring out, nice smelling oil, you're also chayiv for any amount. Koshu, argaman. So we'll say argaman in this context means the dye to make purple wool. Koshu, you're chayiv if you carry out any amount. Ubasulas haveret achos. And we'll say you're chayiv for carrying out one rose petal. So if you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says over here, Reach ra, shema ashen bahen cholin etinokos kigon chiltis la'avriach me'alav mazikin. So apparently, sometimes I will say for people who were ill, they used to burn some type of foul smelling incense. That's reach ra. Argument Rashi says is the dye for purple wool, right? Ultimately, again, and apparently, this was also sometimes used to create a good scent. Besulas haberet, Rashi says, other shalberet bachar achos. So one petal of a young rose bush. Chai will say, again, also, these are all items that are usually used for their scent. So whether the scent is good or the scent is foul, these items generate a scent and are very with a very small shear, therefore a chayfa carrying any amount. Good. Mini matachos kol shein. Metal. If you carry out metal in any amount, you're chayiv. So the maichazi. So we'll say here's the shayla. If you have a small amount of metal, what is that usable for? So Tanya Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, Shekein Ra'i Lasos Mimena Darbon Katan. Because you could use a small amount of metal to make a small ox goad. Okay. Tanra Avanam. So we'll say now that we're speaking about metal, so the Gemara says, Ha'omer Harei Alai Barzel. So we'll say, listen to this. This is now switching context a little bit. This is talking about someone who makes a vow to the Beis HaMikdash. So a person says, I hereby vow to give metal to the Beis HaMikdash. So we'll say, so how much metal am I obligated to give to the Beis HaMikdash? So the Gemara says, Ha'omer Harei Alai Barzel. Achirim omrim lo yifchos me'ama al ama. You have to give at least a one ama by one ama piece of metal. That's the halacha. So the Gemara says, why? L'may chazya. Amar Rav Yosef l'kalya oriv. So we'll say ultimately again, so why? Because that was usable for us. And l'kalya oriv literally means the raven destroyer. Mamish sounds right. So what's the raven destroyer? So Rashi says, or the raven chaser. L'kalya oriv, Rashi says, Tablo'os shal ama hayu osin vehin chadin kisakin siyoseim umesamim chadin bekulan umichapin bahin gag shal heichal l'mnuasar. I'm supposed to say, listen to this. On the top of the Beis HaMikdash, they had razor-sharp, nail-studded sheets of metal. Why? Because they did not want birds, right? They did not want birds kind of hanging out on top of the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, again, they had like these razor-sharp, nail-studded metal shingles, essentially, that would prevent birds from roosting. I was saying, you can see this, it's a little bit different, but like, when you go to the Kotel, so you see, but they have like the movable arons that come out. If you ever notice, they have these pieces of metal that stick up at the edges. That's not decorative, right? But ultimately, again, that's to prevent birds from going ahead and roosting on top. So the ones on the top of the Beis HaMikdash were quite, were a bit more fearsome. We're talking about razor sharp edges, nails, but that was the idea. Therefore, again, those shingles were an amma by amma. So if you go ahead and you say, I hereby dedicate metal to the Beis HaMikdash, you have to give at least a sheet of amma of an amma by an amma. Rabbi said, obviously, you could also give the monetary value of that, but that Allah is what you had to give. Others say, if you pledge metal, you have to give kal ya'oriv, kama amma Rabbi Yosef, amma alam. Rabbi said, it's just a different way to structure the conversation. Nechoshes, what happens if you pledge copper? Lo yifchos mi ma'a kesef. You have to give the amount. This is a dollar amount or a value, right? You have to give at least a silver ma'az worth of nechoshes. Tanya Rabbi Elazar Omer, lo yifchos mi tzinor ketana. No, if you're going to give nechoshes, you have to give at least enough to fashion a small fork, right? A small fork made out of copper. Now, what do you mean a small fork? Lo mai chazya. Because also they used to use a small fork to go ahead and straighten out or cut off the psilos, the wicks for the Beis HaMikdash, and they would also use a small fork to clean out the receptacles on the menorah that was made of copper. Therefore, if you pledged copper, you had to give enough copper to make the small fork. Incredible. Mekak svarim umekak matpechos. So we'll say again, so the Mishnah said, if you have rotted svarim, now we'll remember again, their svarim are scrolls. So you have a rotted scroll or a rotted scroll covering. So if you carry out any amount of that on Shabbos, you're going to be chayiv. Why? Because any amount is chashiv. Why is any amount chashiv? Because any amount would be an amount that you're going to put into Sheamus, you're going to put away because it's no longer usable. So it says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Mekak de Sifri. So we'll say, interesting, Rabbi Yehuda says as follows. Mekak is the name of the worm that rots parchment. That's the or that rot's covering. So mekak is not a description of the compromised state of the scroll, but mekak is the name of the actual Rashi already said in the Mishnah of the tolas of the worm that does this damage. So the Gemara says mekak disifri, tachach dishira. It's only again, it's the tachach worm or the tachach insect that destroys silk. Ve'ila de'invi. It's the ilo worm or ilo insect that destroys grapes. Upeh de te'eni, and it's the peh worm that destroys figs. The Gemara says vehei de rimoni, and it's the hay worm that goes ahead and destroys pomegranates. Kulu sakanta. Now, all of these, not only do they destroy the items in which they reside, but if you ingest them, it could chas v'shalom be fatal. To which the Gemara says, "Ahu Talmida Davi Yosef Kamei Rabbi Yochanan." There was a particular Talmid who was learning by Rabbi Yochanan and learning before Rabbi Yochanan. Hava ka'achil te'eni, he ate the fig. Amar le Rabbi kotzin yesh be'te'enim, and the Talmud said, "Rabbi, it feels like there are thorns inside of the fig." The Rabbi said, "Now, what ended up really happening is those thorns weren't thorns. Those thorns ultimately, again, was the pet worms that he was feeling." Armalei, to which Rabbi Yochanan said to him, "Katlin peladein, oi, the peh has killed this one." Now I'll say, now, bepashtos, if you look, by the way, at the footnote Yud Beis, right, Amar katle, umilas le lesa. So I'll say, bepashtos, Rabbi Yochanan didn't say this to the student, as that would have been a bit callous. Right, to say, "Oh, you're a dead man. Sorry. Thanks for coming to shiur, but we'll give your seat away tomorrow to someone else." You know, that would have been a bit insensitive. So what Rabbi Yochanan Nebuch was saying was to himself, right? Ultimately, unfortunately, it seems like this student ingested the pet worm, and that which he thinks are thorns are in fact, unfortunately, these worms doing damage internally to him. Mishnah, Hamotzi kupas rochlin alfa pishish paminin harbe inu chayv elachat asachos. So let's listen to this. If a person takes out a spice box, and I will say, normally spice peddlers, so what would they do? Spice peddlers would have a big box, and inside of the box, they'd have all smaller compartments or smaller boxes with different types of spices. If you carry out a spice peddler's box on Shabbos, you are only chayiv once. Only chayiv once. In other words, I might have thought maybe I'm chayiv for each and every smaller individual box. Kamashmulo, no, I'm only chayiv once. Zarone gina, if you bring out seeds that are normally planted in a garden, pachos mikro geres, even if you go ahead and you carry out less than a fig's amount, halach l'maisichai nabosei. Now the novelty is there, is normally when it comes to food, Rashi points out, the shear for carrying food on Shabbos is a grogeres, the volume of a dried fig. But yet, because seeds are not normally used for consumption, but rather used for planting, their shear ultimately, again, is even less than a grogeres. Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira says, chamisha amadeis, chamisha. Ultimately, again, the amount of seeds that you're chayiv for carrying is five. If you carry five seeds, you will be chayiv for otzah on Shabbos. Zera kishun shnayim, if you're carrying out cucumber seeds, you're chayiv for carrying out two seeds. Zera diluin, gourd seeds, shnayim, two seeds. I will say, because again, these are considered to be more chashev. Because they're more chashev, therefore halacha lemaisa, you're chayiv even for carrying less. So the Gemara says, zera pula mitzri, this Egyptian pool, shnayim. Ultimately, again, you're chayiv for if you carry out two. Chagav chay tar, if you carry out a live kosher grasshopper, kosher, a grasshopper of any size or of any amount, ultimately, again, you will be chayiv for. So the Gemara says, mace, if the grasshopper is dead, then I will say at that point in time, once the grasshopper is dead, it's food. Once it's food, it's talking about kosher grasshopper, mace, kigro geres. Ultimately, again, ultimately, you're chayiv only if you carry out the volume of a dried fig. So we'll say, so when it's alive, the grasshopper of any shear, kosher grasshopper we're talking about, ultimately you'll be chayiv for carrying it. Once it's dead, then it's food. Once it's food, it's the shear v'grogeres. Tziporis kramim, so we'll say, we'll see in the Gemara what exactly a tziporis kramim is. Ben chayiv ben mesa kolshu. It's an animal, but whether it's alive or whether it's dead, you're chayiv for carrying out any amount. Why? Shematznin also the refuah. Because we will say apparently this Sipporas Kamen was also used as a medicine or as an ingredient in medicine. So because of that, any amount of it is going to be chashiv. Rabbi Huda Omer, Af Hamotzi Chag of Chai Tamei Kol Shehu. We will say, so Rabbi Huda says, even if you carry out a live non kosher grasshopper, if you go ahead and you carry it amount, if any amount to be chayiv, why? What's its use? What's its purpose? Shemachnin also a katan l'sachek bo, because ultimately again people would often give to their children to play with, right? So again, we'll say. So remember, lest you think that that's crazy, we'll say how many people have bought puppies, right? In the last, so people do all kinds of things to entertain their kids. Right? And by the way, grasshopper is much less expensive and much less upkeep. You don't have to walk it. You don't have to, nothing. Mamish, I'm assuming it pretty much takes care of itself. So Yehuda therefore says, halacha lemaisa, even a non-kosher living grasshopper will be chayiv in any amount. Why? Because halacha lemaisa, people use it to entertain their kids. Good. So says the Gemara. Says the Gemara, or many, zeva v'chala daked el zavu kala shalkrov, the Rabbi Akiva, v'chamon k'dev zavu kishin. I both said, here's what's interesting. So the Gemara says that if you carry out zevel is fertilizer, or chol, sand. So you're chayiv if you go ahead and you carry out enough to fertilize one stalk of cabbage, right? One stalk of cabbage, or according to the Chachamim, one leek. They're both saying, now why is the Gemara quoting this? Because what do you see from here? You see from here that even one vegetable is considered to be chashiv. If that's the case, then you should be chayiv on Shabbos for taking out even just one seed. Even just one seed. Yet the Mishnah says that you're only chayiv if you take out more than one seed. In other words, they're both saying, remember, there are different shiurim, whether it's five seeds, whether it's less than a grogeres, whether it's two seeds by cucumbers or by gourds. But one thing is clear, which is it's not one seed. Yet the Brayso here seems to indicate we would assume that if you're chayiv for carrying out enough fertilizer for one plant, that should mean that you should be chayiv for going and carrying out one seed on Shabbos as well. To which the Gemara says, Amra Papa hay dizriya hadalozriya. So Papa says, again, there's a distinction between seeds which have been planted versus seeds which have not been planted. Rasulullah says, so before seeds have been planted, they're only chashiv if you have a more significant amount. Whatever that amount is, less than a grogeres, five, two cucumber seeds, two gourd seeds, but one seed unplanted is not significant. However, once the seeds have been planted, then even one seed is significant. Therefore, which makes sense. So, right before it's planted, one seed is insignificant. Once it's planted, then halacha lemaisa already it's significant. And therefore, if you carry out the amount of fertilizer for one plant, for one seed, you will be chayav. Efficient adam terech lahotzi nema achas lezriya. Because we'll say in general, when planting, a person doesn't take out one seed to be planted. In other words, when planting, you do these actions a bit more en masse. And therefore, you'll only be chayiv if you carry out a larger number of seeds. Zera kishud. So we'll say, remember again, the Mishnah said that halacha lemaisa, when it comes to cucumbers, you're chayiv if you carry out two cucumber seeds. Tana banan bemotzi garinen im lenetiyeshtayim im lachilo kemale pichazir. So we'll say, so the Brayta says as follows. Everything depends on why you're carrying out the seeds. If you're carrying out the seeds, ultimately, again, for planting purposes, then inachinami, two cucumber seeds will be significant. If, however, you're carrying out the seeds because you're going to eat the seeds, then ultimately, again, you're chayiv for carrying out the amount of seeds necessary to fill the mouth of a chazer. So the Gemara says, v'kama, how much, v'kama pi chazer, kimali pi chazer, how much is that to bosai? So the Gemara says, achas. It's one seed. So it's very interesting. So apparently, again, if you're carrying out the seeds for planting purposes, it's at least two. If you're carrying out the seeds for consumption purposes, even one. Good. So the Gemara says, in the Hasik, and if you're carrying out the seeds to use them as fuel for a fire, kedei levashal beitza kala. It has to be enough seeds to start a fire to cook an easily cooked egg. Rashi says, Rashi points out over here, Hamotzi Garinon, Garine Tamra. Sorry, just pointing out over here. So even though the different maskal over here is Zerakishuin, ultimately again is cucumber seeds. Rashi understands that the discussion over here is actually talking about date seeds. Date seeds, okay, date pits. So the Gemara says. So if you're carrying out to go ahead and start a fire, it has to be enough seeds in order to be able to cook an easily cooked egg. Rashi points out over here. Beitza kala kigrogeres mi beitza shikala levashal v'zushal tanagolas. Okay, so the Gemara says im lecheshbon, and if you're carrying out the seeds for counting purposes. So I guess apparently sometimes people would go ahead and use seeds as a way of remembering. Could be maybe for business transactions or for other things. So lechashbin, shtayim. Yuchayv if you carry out two seeds. Achirim omrim chamish. Others say five seeds. Ten rabbanim. We'll say again, going on the theme about items to be carried. Ten rabbanim. Hamotzi shnei nimen mizanavasos. If a person carries out two hairs from a horse tail, right, umizanav hapara, or from a cow's tail, chayiv. So two hairs, apparently from a horse tail, from a cow tail, are significant. Why? What do you do with them? Shematznin osa the nishivin, or the nishbin. Because we'll say, ultimately, again, you use it for traps. So apparently, again, specifically, to make nets in order to catch birds. So apparently, bird-catching nets were made out of horse tail hair or cow tail hair. So the Gemara says, similarly again, miksha shel chazir. So we'll say miksha. Look, if you look at Rashi, he says, name in kashin sheva shedra shel chazir. So apparently, I will say these are the strong strands from the spine of a chazir. Right? So if you go ahead and you carry out the strong strands from the spine of a chazir, you're chayif achos. If you go ahead and you carry out one, because what Rashi says, the chazir leushchapi lasis barosh hamashicha shel tefira. So I'll say, so apparently cobblers used to use this like bristle from the spine of a chazir in order to go ahead and make shoes. Interesting. Okay. So therefore, again, one is chazir. Tsuri dekal shtayim. Pasrabo says this is interesting. So these are palm fronds. You're chayiv if you go ahead and you carry out two. Turi, which are palm vines. Turi dekel achos. Sabo say, so remember again, all of these items here were used in different ways. So the shear for carrying that you're chayiv for will be the amount ultimately again that the item is used in a significant fashion. Fine. Siporis kramim ben chayiv b'meisar kol shu. So we'll say the siporis kramim, whether it's alive or whether it's dead, you're chayiv for carrying out any amount. My siporis kramim. We'll say what is siporis kramim? Amarav palya b'iri. It's palya b'iri. Okay, very helpful. Rashi says, Kach Shmo, that's the name of it. Amra Baye, Umishtachach Bidikla Dechad Navra. And ultimately, again, you could find it in a young palm tree. Now, we're going to see, by the Tziporos Kramim was a type of grasshopper. That's what it was. It was a min of grasshoppers. So where could it be found? It could be found ultimately again in a dikla b'chad navra, in a palm tree with only one vine. Rashi says over here, b'dikla b'chad navra b'dekel b'achar, a young palm tree, shel nichrach adayin ela b'siv echad. Literally, again, it has only one vine that wraps around it, shegadol siv osav v'karcho. So that's where this Tziporis Kramim lives. It's actually very interesting. And ultimately, again, it was known that to eat this item was a skula ultimately for wisdom. So the Gemara says, what would you do with it? You would eat the right side of the grasshopper, of the right Tziporis Kramim. And the left side of the grasshopper you would put it into a tube of sorts, into a copper tube, and you would seal the tube with 60 seals. You would go ahead and hang it on your left arm. And ultimately again, whatever you learn, so after you eat the right half, put the left half in the copper tube, seal it up with 60 seals, hang it from your left arm. Learn all you want to learn, and whatever you learn, you could absorb as much information as you want. Then what would happen after you finish learning? Then eat the other half. Because if you don't eat the other half, you will go ahead and forget all that you have learned. So I will say, so again, we don't have time for it today, but Yom HaMina, in a time when we do have more time, We'll go through this. The Maral in Chiddushi Agadis has a beautiful insight into this, exactly what it means. Remember, again, in Judaism, we don't believe in hocus pocus stuff. But ultimately, again, there's a beautiful, deeper meaning to this. But again, we'll keep it on the list of items we have to go back to. Rabbi Huda Omer Afa Motzi. So, remember again, Rabbi Huda says that even if one goes ahead and carries out a living non-kosher grasshopper in any amount, you're chayiv. Why? Because people will use it to give it to their kids as a toy. Says the Gemara of Tanakama Savar Lo. Tanakama holds not like this. My time, Dilma Achile. So we'll say Tanakama holds people do not keep kosher grasshopper, non-kosher grasshoppers around their house, especially as toys for their kids. Why not? The concern is the kid may eat it. The kid may put kids put all kinds of stuff on their mouth, and the concern is that the kids are going to eat it. Ihachi tahar nami. If that's the case, I will say, why should I not be concerned about a kosher grasshopper as well? Then I will say, this is actually quite amazing. The Haref Kahana, I will say, you know, we know that there are certain minim of grasshoppers that are kosher. Yet, I think many of us, the notion of grasshopper consumption seems so foreign and so alien. What, this is actually a fascinating Gemara that gives insight as to why that is. Listen to this. Rav Kana was once in front of Rav. And ultimately, again, Rav Kahana, if you look at Rashi, Rav Kahana, Shoshiva min chagavtar. Rav Kana was about to put a grasshopper in his mouth. A Shoshiva. Now, Shoshiva is a kosher grasshopper. Amarle, Rav said to him, Shakle, stop it. Stop it. Take that away. Ultimately, again, what were we concerned about? Don't eat the grasshopper. Why? Because people are going to think that you're eating a sheretz, right? That you're eating creepy clothing. As Rabbi was saying, the problem with grasshoppers is there are some types that are kosher, some types that are not kosher. And apparently, again, to the untrained eye, you don't necessarily know there's some kosher ones and non-kosher ones. What Rav was concerned about was that if people see Rav Kahana eating a grasshopper, they'll make the assumption that what? Grasshoppers are kosher. And if grasshoppers are kosher, a person may come to inadvertently consume something that they should not be consuming. So Rav stopped Rav Kahana from eating the grasshopper. It's pretty amazing. So therefore, again, I will say, using this logic, again, a person would not normally go ahead and keep the grasshopper around. So what's the concern? Ela Dilma Mayis va'achile. Rather, ultimately, again, Rashi says, Elo, la mishum dechayish dilma achile chai, Elo dilma mayis va'achile v'ka'achal tome, aval tar shapir dami. So I'll say, so ultimately, again, the concern is that maybe, again, if a person goes ahead and keeps a non-kosher grasshopper around, then maybe ultimately, again, what will happen? What will happen? Halacha l'maisa. Halacha l'maisa, a person will come to eat it, maybe not when it's alive, but ultimately when it's dead. Now, I will say now, if you look at Rashi, just very quickly, I know the hour is late, but just take a quick look at Rashi, Ihachi tar, Chai nami dilma achile, vi'im mishum de'in bo isra'ever men achai, dechagav ein tar, shchita ispe, excuse me, ispe miyam mishum bal teshaktsu. So we'll say, this is actually interesting. So what Rav was really stopping Rav Kahana from doing was ultimately, again, eating a living grasshopper. Right, that was really the concern here. Technically speaking, there's no reason you can't eat a living grasshopper because ultimately, again, a grasshopper doesn't require shechita. But yet Rav was saying to Rav Kahana, don't do that because the act of eating something living is an issue of bal teshaktsu, engaging in a disgusting practice. So better not to do this. Better not to do this. To which the Gemara says, you're right. The concern over here that the Rabbanan had was not in the consumption ultimately of a living grasshopper, but rather again it was in the consumption of a dead grasshopper. Ela Dilma Mayis Vakile. Rabbi Huda apparently was not concerned about the consumption of a dead grasshopper, a non-kosher dead grasshopper. Why? So we'll say, so remember again. So now what we're saying over here is like this. The issue that we're really concerned about is in the event that ultimately, again, the grasshopper dies, the child may come to eat it, right? Because if it comes to living grasshoppers, there's a concern of eating even a kosher living grasshopper. So rather, the concern is maybe the grasshopper will die, and ultimately, again, you will come to eat something non-kosher. Rabbi Huda is not concerned about it. Why? Rabbi Huda, imayis, everyone knows that if the kid has a pet grasshopper and the grasshopper dies, Katan Misbad Sapidle. What is the kid going to do? He's going to hold the Levaya. He's going to give a Hesped. He's going to bury it. he's not going to eat it. So this is really incredible. So Rabbi Yehuda says the only time you would maintain, it's really quite fascinating, the only time you would maintain, ultimately, again, a non-kosher grasshopper would be as a pet for the child. No one's eating living grasshoppers anyway, because of Bal Tishaktsu. So the only concern would be, so the rabbis are concerned, we don't want you holding on to a dead non-kosher grasshopper, lest the katan come to eat it. To which Rabbi Huda says, there's no concern that the katan is going to come to eat it. Why? Because it's his pet. And because it's his pet, if it dies, he's going to do a hesped, he's going to do a levaya, and ultimately, again, he is not going to go ahead and come to consume it. So Rashi says, interesting. So the Rambam understands over here that halacha lemaisa, he only codifies the halacha in terms of a chagav chai tahar, and mace kigrogeres. Halacha lemaisa, so the Rambam says the assumption was people were not maintaining non-kosher grasshoppers, not even as pets. Not even as pets, out of the concern of Chazal, that ultimately, again, if it dies, there's a concern that the kid is going to come to eat it. Therefore, the Rambam says people don't maintain non-kosher grasshoppers. And halacha lemaisa, again, the shear for a kosher grasshopper is any amount when it's alive. When it's dead, it takes on the status of food, and the status of food ultimately is kigrogeres, the size of a dried fig. Hadron halacham Rabbi Akiva, levosi yashakoyach to everyone. Those who are remaining on for those who are going to join us for the Zoom in from the Shul parking lot, I'm going to end this Zoom chat now, and Amir Hashem sign back on in just a little bit. Yeah, Shakaich, and have a wonderful day to everyone.